from the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida. It's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 8th, 2011. You're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, have we been shut down lately?
I have not checked. I don't think we have.
Anybody selling us some third world country or anything like that?
Yeah, no, but I am checking with the Podcast Gaming Commission.
Okay.
To be sure that they haven't suspended us worldwide.
It's okay to listen to us. We promise.
Well, you know, hey, we were in Vegas all last week, and a crap ton of stuff happened while we were out there that we didn't get on the show last week because, you know, we had to, of course, you know, get the much more important chicken feet nibbling and
we were fighting the roaches for the internet connection, out. Too, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That stuff was far more important than, you know, A-list Hollywood stars being sued or Full Tilt being shot down. So we're playing a little catch-up this week, I guess is the right word, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just... I'm thinking about how incredible it was while we were out there following it on like Twitter and talking, seeing what people were going to wear for patches the next day at the World Series and whether or not you'd see a Full Tilt patch and some crazy stuff going on. And then it was like, oh, it's being sold to Jack Binion for $6 billion. You know, he has $6 billion. And I'm like, I don't think Jack Binion's buying Full Tilt, but let's see what happens anyway. And then now it's some European things buying Full Tilt, and one of the reasons they're buying is that they guarantee they're going to pay back the players, and I don't know what's going on, but I'm just glad we weren't affiliated with them when it happened.
Yeah, I wish we could add something of substance to what's going on, but it's still a very confusing situation. You're right, the whole Twitter thing is just... out of control. I'm just now embracing the whole tweets thing, and you know, when I'm bored and stuff, it's nice to read through the feeds and see what's going on. But yeah, I mean, we get our again tweets. Oh, I have it on high authority that Jack Binion's buying the company.
Yeah.
Well, it hasn't happened yet. Unless he's part of this European investor group that supposedly is buying it now. So, you know, it's just one more way of spreading bad information, unfortunately.
Yeah. And you and I remember we were walking in the parking lot out there in one of the casinos, and I'm saying to you, you know, it's just like ESPN when they quote the Twitter accounts of, like, Ocho Cinco or something, and it's like, as real news, it's like, how do you know Ocho Cinco didn't lose his phone and some guy didn't post it? Or how do you know he didn't give it to his buddy and his buddy was playing a joke on him and he's saying, yeah, I want to play for the, you know, I want to restart the World League of American Football and go play for the Rhine Fire or something. You know what I mean? I mean, how do you know that's just not real?
Nice reference there.
Thanks.
Very nice.
I was going old school with that one. But yeah, really, yeah. I mean, how can you quote this stuff as news? I don't pay attention to it. I laugh at what's on Twitter or whatever when I look at it occasionally. But really, don't go by that as real news source and start spreading it. It's just crap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one way or the other, though, this is just a colossal meltdown of one of the largest online poker sites ever. I mean, it's just shocking to me that if you would ask me on April 14th whether Full Tilt would be out of business in 3 months.
Yeah.
I would have laughed at you.
I know.
And boom, gone, done. And obviously, like I said, reportedly it's been bought by this group of investors who, one, has enough money to settle whatever charges the Justice Department is levying against them. Two, has enough money to pay back like all these players who haven't been paid back in 2 months. And three, has enough money to then pump into the company to make it a viable entity again. So I'm not saying I'm not skeptical, but I'm skeptical. That's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a lot of money to just throw on the drain that you'll never see again, hoping that the product will come back and, you know, rebound for a profit and to make all that money back. It's just unbelievable that somebody's going to want to do that.
Well, you know, Godspeed to him. I hope it works out. I never like to see anybody fail a business, but... you know, it's got a good name. I don't know. Obviously, the name's taken a little hit here recently, so
right.
I guess you got to bring it back a little bit. But I don't know whether it really has a future here in the U.S. I mean, that's the big question about PokerStars that everybody's talking about. Oh, you know, hey, once we get all a law passed here in the U.S., stars will come back and everything will be hunky dory. And I hope that's true, but I'm not seeing any evidence that anybody in any official capacity is interested at all in letting PokerStars back into this market.
Yeah.
Let alone Full Tilt. So, you know, I don't know what the market is for a slightly damaged site that couldn't pay payers back. And now is not taking any money.
I tell you, it's sad.
I really think, as much as I hate men playing the ladies' event, I wonder if Phil Hellmuth had entered, whether he would have finished second, Chris.
It's pretty remarkable what he is doing this year. I mean, bridesmaid three times in a row, as they say. That's incredible. This is sort of breaking news. Of course, if you don't listen to the show until Friday, then it won't be, it'll be old news. But, yeah, literally waking up this morning and finding out that he blew a 5-1 chip lead at the end, heads up, to try to win the 50K and then lost it to Brian Rast, who, by the way, has won two bracelets this year now. And it's just incredible. Absolutely incredible. I'm so glad he did well, because I'm tired of hearing about how he doesn't do well in non-Hold'em events. But, again, he didn't win a whole non-Hold'em bracelet, so he's going to be stuck with that moniker for a little while longer.
Yeah, and it's going to be an unfair thing. I mean, it's going to be accurate to say he doesn't have a bracelet in another event. But, you know, to finish second in three events in the same year that were non-Hold'em, well, yeah. You know, it's just, you know, you should get some credit. And I hate this. I hate that he's making me feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I know.
Because he's not a guy, I have no real personal hatred against the guy, I just don't like how he carries himself, but I just don't like feeling bad for people like that. But how can you not? I mean, the guy's playing great poker, he's just not closing.
Yeah, it's incredible. Player of the Year leader, and that's with Brian Rast having two titles, including one of the biggest titles there are, and he's still Player of the Year leading right now. You got to give him props, but at the same time, you know, oh man, how terrible he must feel today.
Yeah, I can imagine this is what the Hollywood script would be. Heads up against Johnny Chan. And loses this time to him in the main event.
Yeah.
Storybook. They would rush that.
The incredible career that he's had and all those bracelets, and that's actually the first seven-figure score he's ever had in his career.
Really? I didn't know that.
Isn't that wild?
Huh.
Because, you know, most of his bracelets came before the poker boom, and now the ones that he wins are, you know, undercard events that aren't, you know, the main event thing. But, yeah, it's the first seven-figure he's ever won.
Well, I do hope he holds on to the Player of the Year title, because I certainly think that should be the least of the consolation prizes he gets for getting this close and not getting a bracelet, because, I mean, he's only got, what, 11 at home, right?
Hey, should we have said spoiler alert before we...
No, hey man, this is like on ESPN 360. People are watching. It's real time, baby.
And it's on Twitter, so you know it's true.
Yeah, so I mean, we're not breaking any news here. Well, all right. So the World Series is going on, but there's also another world event going on, Chris. The Women's World Cup.
Yep.
And it was going on the entire time we were out in Vegas, and I so desperately wanted to bet on it, just because I like to bet on stuff, because I can't do it here, and we were too busy for me to bet on anything.
Yeah, I asked you a couple times during the trip. I was like, "Did you make any bets yet?" "No, I will, but you never did.
No, we were just too busy. And you know, here's the thing too, when I make sports bets, I don't like just make sports bets to make sports bets. I like to actually watch the game. It makes it a little more exciting. And if I can't watch the game, then you know, it's probably not worth it. Plus, we were just too busy. So anyhow, but I've caught the soccer bug too, or football, wherever you want to call it, wherever you're listening, and I've been going to a lot of games here in town too. But so Jay Herkey, one of our longtime listeners, also has caught the Women's World Cup bug, or at least watched a match,
or at least was flicking through the channels and saw what he's about to talk about for a couple of seconds.
And he wrote in with this little nugget here. He says, "I know how much you all like to find poker themes in quote unquote real world events." So I thought you guys were watching the France versus Nigeria match this morning. Oh, splendid. Splendid.
Splendid.
Match on the pitch there. In case you didn't know, it's the Women's World Cup going on. Anyway, there was an Adidas ad. You know those ads that are strewn around the boundaries of the field. You know, and they do that because there's no commercial breaks.
Right.
And it said, Adidas is all... And he says, "Nice, huh? Now, I'm not exactly sure what they are all in about." "But I found it to be pretty cool. I mean, it has to be poker-related, right? What else do you say you're all in except the poker tables? If you say somewhere else, you're certainly referencing poker."
Well, just real quick, I think you may have dropped out there. The ad said Adidas is all in. I didn't hear you there, so you may have dropped out. So just in case they didn't hear it on the show. Yeah, I have a question, though. And you know how I always reference Family Guy?
Uh-huh.
There was an episode once where he did one of his patented flashbacks to, like, his, you know, his great-uncle Wilbur back in, like, the 20s, and he was a silent film star, or something like that. I don't remember the specifics, but they made a joke about something about how, you know, how do you get all in or something. Or it was something about you run around the house until you're all in. And I thought, what? And I know it wasn't poker related because it was just some sort of saying back then about being all in or something. So I don't know. Maybe is it poker related? I don't know. It's a good question.
Well, you know, I know when I'm at the buffet, I like to be all in as well, too. Nothing to do with poker. I mean, hey, I paid $20, man. I'm going to sample everything.
Yeah, you know, when I'm taking the in-laws for a ride in the car, and it takes them forever because they're in their 80s, I like to say, are we all in?
Are we all in?
Before I drive away. So I don't know if that was poker related.
Yeah,
I don't think
you don't
want
to leave father-in-law hanging out there on the corner.
Yeah, the last thing I want is, nice, you know, pull off when he's got his leg hanging out the door and he bumps his head. So I'm like, yeah, are we all in? We're all in. Okay, let's go. And then,
and you know, that's just so stereotypical. When you say that, people would probably say, oh, he's a poker player. Of course he's going to say, are you all in? It's just unfair for you, isn't it?
Yes, because that's not what I meant at all. I just meant, are we all in the car? So is Adidas all in?
All in wherever you want without regard to poker.
That's right. Why should I be stereotyped?
Maybe we'll start a nonprofit for that. Poker players against being stereotyped for saying all in. .org.
.org. .co.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like a weird phrase, actually, to be honest, for Adidas.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're trying to get at there. But maybe they are trying to play out the poker thing, but...
Just seems like when you've got a... When you have an audience for women's World Cup soccer, the last thing you're doing is going through your, you know, all your numbers and saying, all right, our data says that poker players watch women's soccer. We need to make an ad campaign. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it is poker related, but feels like it's just, you know, they're dedicated to something. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, the other thing too is to make it sound like that there was a time when they weren't all in.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we used to be half in, but we're getting excited this year, so we're all in now, guys. Just in case you thought we were not there before.
Yeah, you know, and that reminds me too. One of our tangents here. I'm sorry, is my random thought of the day. But, you know, I'm watching TV the other day, and you know they've got this new device for that off insect repellent thing, and it's like this sort of beeper thing that you hang off your pants that creates this zone around you. And the way they market it is the mom comes out with the spray first, and the dad and the kids like wince, and they're like, no, don't spray us with the ugly can of bug spray. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, off. Don't you have like 500 products that are still bug spray? And aren't you like telling everybody that your products suck unless you buy just this one little thing that hangs off the pockets of your pants? So, I mean, really, it makes no sense to me. You're making telling us that the other products suck. So why should I buy your other off products? You know, because it's obviously the most grotesque thing that could ever happen to somebody when they're looking for protection from bug bites, you know? I mean, same thing here. It's like, we're all in now, but, you know, if you were buying our products before, you were the fool, because we were really dedicated to giving you a quality product. You know what I mean? It's just crazy. They think we're idiots watching TV. Well, I guess most of us are, but, I mean, really, you think you'd be able to see through some of this.
That's true. I don't know. I don't give the American viewing public... that much credit. And I'm part of the American viewing public, so I'm counting myself into that. Just in case you think I'm making fun of other people.
But Jay Herkey's letter is perfect timing because, drumroll please.
He's the winner in our Annie Up Storms Nevada Facebook contest. Chris, he actually picked 77 rooms. We actually picked 70. We actually made it to 76. And you know what? When I was going back looking over my notes for the show today, I realized I drove right past a room.
Oh.
In Carson City.
Ooh.
I'm sure it was a small room. Probably, yeah, I'm no better or worse off for not going there.
Well, maybe when you looked at the building, you know, there was a window that was the poker room, and you actually saw the poker room, so that would make it 77.
I could cheat like that, but I'm not. It doesn't really matter to me how many we hit. But it would have been awesome if Jay Herkey hit it right on the head. But unfortunately, because of my poor map skills, he was one over. But we don't play Price is Right rules here, so he wins. I already put the swag bag in the mail to him, so I hope you enjoy that, Jay Herkey. Thanks for playing. And unfortunately, you know, we try to do a contest on Twitter, too. And I'm not hating on this Twitter thing much. But, you know, I thought I had a foolproof thing. We're going to hashtag everything. We can go back and we can search for all the hashtags. Bing! It's like a little filing cabinet, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Twitter did not tell me that those things only go back like 4 days.
Oh, there's a huge flaw in our system.
Yeah, or fail in the Twitter universe.
Yeah.
And boom, all the guesses were... They're not gone. They still exist somewhere in the Twitter universe. But I haven't figured out a way to get it back. A couple people sent me a couple links and stuff to do, but none of that worked. So here's the thing. We let everybody know on Twitter that, hey, we can't find the guesses. Nick, Mariana, did I get it right?
Close enough.
He was on the show. It took us 7 takes before I got his name right.
Close enough.
He had guessed 73. Pretty darn close.
Yeah.
And so I tweeted, I'm like, hey, if you can beat him, let us know. We'll go back and check your own personal page, see if it's on there. And if so, you win. No one responded. So, hey, Nick, you win. Congratulations.
Woohoo!
And you have a very similar swag bag in the mail to you as well, too. So
what I find interesting, and I didn't realize this till later, but you had said something to the effect of, in full disclosure, there are a few rooms we can't get to, so the numbers around, the max number is like 70.
Yeah.
So when you tell people the max number is 70...
I said the... Let's get the... I don't want to get burned to the stake here. The effective number.
Okay. I mean, there's no difference there. I mean, to me, you say the effective number is 70.
No, means that though we can only get to 70. It's a ceiling.
All right.
Effective means we're probably only going to get to 70.
But to guess 77 and 73, that's pretty ballsy. And they deserve to win. You know, you take a chance, that's what makes you succeed in life. And that's what they did. So congrats and enjoy the swag. all right, well, we got a mailbag this week. It's nice to get some of the regular segments back in the rotation since we've been on the road. And this comes from Christy in Maine. She's contacted us a few times, and now she said she's been playing on Club WPT, and she wants to give a little bit of a review. She's in the trial period, and she wants to decide she wants to pay for it. So here are her observations. The time clock to play is very fast, she says. She gets 6 or 7 seconds before the sound warns you that you have 6 or 7 seconds left before you have to fold. And she said, because betting is so unwieldy that several times her hand was folded as she was trying to evaluate what was in the pot and that kind of thing and who was still in the hand. She said, it's also difficult to read your chip amount when you're in a hand. The text is small and blue against a yellow background. I hate that. When I design stuff for the magazine, I never do yellow and blue. It just doesn't work out. Ends up making green, and it's not fun.
It's green, yeah.
She says, they do have money tournaments, but you have to wrestle through hundreds of people for like $20 or a $50 prize pool. And note she said prize pool is $50. The $20 or $50 is spread out over several winners, so really, she's wondering if it's worth that. Then she says every time she changes tables, she has to reset her view settings. That's rough.
That's a miss.
You know, she likes to see a four-color deck and see pot size and all that. She has to reset all that every time she sits at a new table. She said, I wish I could change the notifications because time is so short, I am longing for the annoying beep-beep from Poker Stars.
I miss it so much.
You getting weepy, buddy? Yeah, I can feel you there. I miss it, too. It's so weird when I sit down at a poker table. It's like everything's all new to me again because I haven't played online at all.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, and this is what's happening is, you know, a lot of our listeners and the people are looking for an option, particularly people like Christy from Maine. I mean, the closest poker room to Maine is probably, what, New Hampshire?
Yeah, definitely. You
know, probably a little bit of haul there, and so that leaves you with home games or online. If you don't have online, you got to look for the options out there, and Club WPD is one of the subscription sites out there, and people are trying it out, so I appreciate that she said in the review. I know some other people kind of let us know a little bit what's going on there. And I mean, I guess the takeaway from here is that it's not Poker Stars. And, you know, there's no way it can be, unfortunately.
Right, and you pay for what you get. I mean, really, first of all, I don't know, too, if any of these things would change if you come out of the trial period and actually start paying for it.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, if you're a full subscriber or whatever they call it. And so that could change those things, so I don't want to give it a damnation here. I'm just saying that you right now you have a pretty much a cheap or a free trial, and again, you know, you're playing with people who are paying $20 a month to play, so you're not going to play for thousands of dollars. So there's really no reason to make this the full-fledged site that PokerStars was, you know, or is. So I'm not going to say this is a good or a bad review because I really don't know what the full product would be. And again, it's a subscription site, so you can't really look for all the bells and whistles either.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not a damnation of it at all. It's you know, I have every reason to expect that this site and other ones like it put out the best product they can with the available money they have.
Right.
I mean, when you're only hitting, you know, people up for $20 a month, that's all you can get from them. There's only so much money coming in.
Exactly.
You know? So I mean, it's not like, you know, a PokerStars where you could literally rake $1,000 per month from someone. I don't know exactly who generates the most rake ever on PokerStars, but I'm quite certain that most PokerStars players contribute more than $20 to PokerStars bottom line each month.
Yeah.
In terms of rake and stuff. So, you know, it is what it is. So, you know, I appreciate that people are trying them out, and just hope that people gonna give them a little rope understanding, you know, what they're doing. Doesn't mean they have to continue with a subscription for a product that they're not happy with. But
I appreciate the review, too. I mean, that's one of the things that we had going for a little while there, where, you know, some of our fans were writing in and telling us about poker rooms they were playing in or whatever. So it's always good to spread the word because, you know, we've talked about Club WPT, but really no first-person experience. So I'm glad you wrote in.
And Christy, we'll be happy to send you something worth more than the $20 a month that you'll be paying for Club WPT. So think of it as another free month.
Yes.
When your trial period runs out. We're going to send you a lovely t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com.
The phone was ringing while we were gone. And,
it did. We racked up some hotlines while we were gone.
So. We weren't there to answer them or check them, so now we get to hit our cachet for Dan from AC calls in. Let's see what he has to say.
I just got back from a trip to Lake Tahoe and swung down to Reno. And one thing I noticed when I went to the El Dorado Poker Room, which was the busiest, nicest I found in Reno, was that the pit manager, the floor manager, did a really good job of promoting the room. I don't know if that's something you guys could talk to your managers about. They never do it at Atlantic City, but he was on the loudspeaker all the time, trying to get players in, telling them open seats, what was available, tournaments that was going on, and it was broadcast throughout the entire casino. He did a fantastic job.
How appropriate, Chris. Our show today is on the Reno and Laughlin markets.
It's funny how that works out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a complete coincidence. No, he didn't mention the who exactly this was, and he said the room manager, and we know the room manager there is Margie, a fantastically friendly woman who loves Annie Up, and we're looking forward to meeting her. She just happened to be out of town when I was there. So maybe it was Greg, the assistant manager, who I had lunch with, and we'll talk more about that in the main topic today. But it doesn't matter. I mean, it just shows that the room really does care about its players.
And locally, where we are here, I think Sam does that a lot, too, down at Sarasota,
yeah,
One Eye Jacks. That's what they do. He sits at the table in the middle, or his four people will, and they just start, you know, selling off these sit-and-go tables, or, you know, they really make sure that everyone knows what's going on in the room and sparking their memory, too. Like, you know, sometimes I'm sitting at a table and I forget that you could play in, like, a $125 sit-and-go or six-handed,
right,
or something like that, or something's coming up. So that's really smart, and that's what we do. I mean, he's one of the ones that does it locally. I don't really remember other ones doing that as well as he does. But, yeah, it's always smart to have somebody out there hawking your product.
Well, yeah, and there's probably a fine line. I mean, there's probably some players out there that are looking for their poker experience to be library-esque,
right,
and quiet, so they may not really appreciate this. But I think for the most part, I mean, it's nice that rooms are trying to sell themselves.
Yeah.
You know, so I always like that when I go down to Sarasota, but that's just me. I like that. So, I mean, if you don't like that, you're probably not going to like that, and you're probably not going to like El Dorado, but it's a very nice room, and it's in a cluster down there. We'll talk about this in the main topic too. So, you know, there might be a reason why it's the largest in that cluster, and this could be it.
Well, just remember the phone number is 813-448-1120. You call the hotline, you'll get something cool like Dan's about to get. Deck of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up, now available in our store at annieupstore.com.
Yeah, you know, Dan's a Diamond member.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you remember that from the AC meetup?
Yeah.
Yeah, and but the one thing Diamond doesn't get you, it gets you everything else in the world. It doesn't get you J Design playing cards.
That's right.
Got to call in to get that bad boy.
Diamond status. Everyone wants it.
Oh, I love this cauliflower this week, and I love them all because it's real interesting to learn the ins and outs of rules. But this is something that I hadn't heard of until Chris. I always mess his name up.
Guidi.
I'm gonna try.
Chris Guidi. Guidi. Yeah.
Unk and Gone Poker. See, I messed up two words there. He forced me into it. But he's written in a lot, and to be honest, I had never heard of this organization that he mentioned until this. And I've had a couple conversations with some people since then. So here's what he wrote in. He says the FIDPA recently published its poker rule set, which incorporates most of the TDA rules and then some. The rules are being used by the Bellagio and a few others. I'd be really interested in hearing a tournament director's point of view on the different rule sets being used and whether any more rooms would change the FIDPA rules. I'm also looking at it from a home game tournament director point of view as well. With the TDA rules, Robert's Rules of Poker, and now FIDPA rules, it might get ugly if there's discrepancies between the rule sets.
This reminds me of all the boxing commissions that are out there, and all the different, you know, titles and belts.
And we should probably pause to say the TDA stands for Tournament Director Association, and essentially what that is, and the FIDPA are set the rules for tournaments.
Right. Do you know what FIDPA stands for?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I was hoping you wouldn't, because it's going to embarrass me that I don't.
No, because it's not, because I don't know either, so it's not going to embarrass you. But I was going to look it up while we're on the show. Maybe while you read Jody's response to this, I'll look it up for you.
You're going to look it up?
Yeah.
See, the funny thing is I've actually been to their website. After I got this email, I went to the website and read about them a little bit. And interestingly enough, they charge rooms to use their rules in their rooms.
Oh, wow.
The TDA does not do.
Well, I have the answer already, so do you want the answer?
Sure.
It is the Fédération Internationale de Poker Association. Mm. So it's the international one, so it's got those, you know, languages that we don't speak in there. But, you know, the International Poker Federation is pretty much what it is. But, the Fédération Internationale de Poker Association.
Wow, very
so
nice.
International rules rather than
and the TDA is largely an American creation, though I imagine there are rooms worldwide they use it as well.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
All right. So it's an us versus them thing again. We're used to that here in the U.S. All right. Well, here's what Jody Russell, our Antioch Poker Cruise Poker Room manager, wrote in to say. He says the FIDPA rules are written in a manner that is compatible with the TDA rules. They have incorporated additional rules that clarify things not addressed by the TDA rules. One example of this would be the requirement of the endorsed properties to have tournament structure sheets on hand for players. Does anyone familiar with TDA rules will not find any conflict with the FIDPA rules? There shouldn't be any confusion or alarm, since FIDPA and TDA address tournaments and Robert's rules are traditionally used for cash games. There's really no conflict here either. There are some rooms to go with TDA rules for cash game situations. He says he suggests finding out what is being followed anytime you play in a room that is new to you.
Mm, very smart. It's interesting, though. I wonder, you know, like they just had the TDA summit, right, that we were out there for. We actually didn't get a chance to stop in, but it was going on then. It was one of the reasons why we didn't get to see everybody we wanted to see, too. But, you know, they made some changes.
Yeah.
So I wonder if those changes now are in conflict with the FIDPA or not, or if when something like that happens, the FIDPA is contacted and they say, this is what we're doing now, consider changing it, or... So it still kind of sucks that there's more than one overall governing body or rule setter or whatever. But you know, hey, you got to at least you have them out there. At least there's something out there trying to set rules for you.
Well, yeah. What's interesting about this, and I think this is what the impetus of Chris writing in about was, you know, before the TDA, there wasn't any kind of standard rulemaking. So it was created so people didn't have to go in and ask every time they sat down what the rules were, and now if you walk into a room and you know they play by TDA rules, you should know how things are going to work there, and obviously there's some interpretations back and forth.
Right.
So then when you get a competing organization, now it just changes the whole thing. You know, hey, we just got uniform, and now we're going to have a Hatfield versus McCoy uniform. but it's good to see, at least as of Jody's writing here, that there's no conflict. And you mentioned the TDA summit, and in the next couple of weeks or so, we'll have an Antioch fan who's actually a member of the TDA and was at the meeting. I'm going to try to get him on the show to summarize what some of those changes were this year. And some of the managers we talked to out in Vegas said some of them were pretty big. Yeah. I don't know what that means. Yeah. You know, because you know when you're insulated in there, you think anything's a big change. So it might not be that big a deal for low level grinders like us, but it could be.
Yeah, and we'll be sure to have a report on it too in our next issue, our August issue as well. So be on the lookout for that. So you know, we've been getting contacted by a lot. I guess you know people miss us when we're gone. A lot of our listeners have been writing in, and Rianne Hill said, "Thanks for the swag and not botching my name."
You just botched it.
Hopefully, I just botched
it. Totally botched it.
Yeah, hopefully I did.
No, actually, I don't think you did.
Seeing as you in America have this so unfortunate internet business going on, I love the way people write sometimes. It's so smart. I would never think to write it that way, but that was awesome. I thought you might have time to try a game which a friend and I invented after a few beers. Good.
That's what every game is.
Yeah, exactly.
Think they're a sober guy invented Raz?
I was going to say, that's when Raz was invented. That's exactly what I was going to say. The game is called Croaker. It is Crappy No Limit Hold'em four-handed. There is the normal betting rounds, but the twist is there is six sets of community cards dealt instead of one set. At the end of the river betting round, the dealer rolls a die, and you see which board you are playing. Scary game, but funny after a few beers.
Oh, man. Can you imagine that?
That is fantastic.
Yeah, is it inconceivable that not everybody is all in on this game every hand?
You have to be. If you're going to play the hand, you're going to go with it. I would assume you want to start with a pocket pair, and that's it.
Well, that's true. I mean, I guess it is. It's a double flop on steroids in the sense that you want to have a hand that plays well on as many boards as possible, and then it's up to the Russian roulette of the die.
Oh my God, that's
crazy. Whether
it
works or not, but I don't know. I kind of like it actually. I mean, it's certainly not going to catch on because it adds too much luck to it. But as we say, every poker game has an element of skill to it. And I think we just kind of tripped our way into it there.
That's pretty funny. I mean, to come up with that, too, is pretty original.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm wondering, he'll have to tell us what the genesis of this is besides, a few beers. But you know how when we first started playing our home games, Chris, and we went out to, like, the local Sears or wherever, we bought our little poker chip case right after the big boom, and everybody sold them. And they always came with, like, the rolled-up chips. A couple deck of really crappy cards that lasted like one night, and some dice.
Yeah, they always had like six dice in there.
And I never understood that. I mean, I've never played a poker game where I've had to have dice.
Well, it might not just be poker, though. I mean, I guess you could play other games that involve dice, right? Like Canasta or something. There's some game that involves dice.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, just because there's poker chips doesn't mean that you have to only play poker. I guess. They're trying to make a full set.
I was being a pokerist there. Probably in it.
You know, it'd be really cool is if they use a backgammon die when they did this, and you have to play 32.
Oh my gosh,
flops.
32 boards!
All right, we've got six decks. We're going to play 32 boards. That'd be fun.
Oh man, and you better believe I'm calling Croaker in the next home game.
You're going to play, what is it, 211 Croaker?
yes, and you'll be like, oh my gosh, are we seriously going to play this? And then that's going to make me change from just kidding to saying yes.
Yes, we are playing
play this.
Oh my God.
So I'm calling it now, Croaker, in the next home game.
All right, it's the first time you're up.
Rihanna, our friend from New Zealand.
Okay, well, we got some housekeeping to take care of here. We are expanding. You should be looking for our magazine this week in your favorite room in Arizona, Colorado, and Iowa. And if you don't see our magazine there, then you need to talk to them because we're sending it. So, and then coming to California in September, a big step for us, Ben. Big step.
Big state.
That makes us coast to coast. That makes us truly available from east to west.
Sea to shining sea.
And we still need some ambassadors, especially in California. We think we may have a couple lined up. But, if you're still interested, now that you know that we're in all these states, and we have one for the three we just mentioned, but we're going to keep going too. We're going to have other states, so apply at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors, and we will see if we can get you part of the Antiup family.
Excellent, and don't forget our cruise coming up August 29th and September 2nd. Still have a few, and when I say a few, a very few staterooms available at our contract price of $369 per person based on double occupancy. So give us a call or visit antiupmagazine.com/cruise, and we will attempt to get you booked at the best possible price that we can.
Well, let's see what else is piling up on the NEUP news desk.
Brian Ruderman, a hedge fund manager convicted of embezzling from clients, has sued some A-list Hollywood stars, Chris, to recover money he allegedly lost to them in high-stakes poker games and hotel suites and other private locations.
Yeah, I just don't get this. First of all, who's going to believe this guy anyway, that right, whatever he's suing for is on the level? But second of all, I love that it's like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, says Mr. Spider-Man Tobey Maguire. You know, I love all these names that are attached to this, too. It's great.
Well, I think the funniest thing that came out of this is, you know, when I spent quite a bit of time on this show railing on internet news reports.
Yeah.
But we were actually at the Rio Media Room, and I think I showed you my Google News feed had, you know, clumped all the stories together.
Yep.
And one headline said, Tobey Maguire admits playing illegal games. And the next headline said, Tobey Maguire, I never played illegal poker. So how do you decide who you want to believe? That's the beauty of the internet. You can believe anything you want.
All right. Nominations for the Poker Hall of Fame are open to the public through August 14th at WorldSeries or WSOP.com/PHOF. So just go to... Just go to WSOP.com and you'll figure out where to find it. But after nominations close, a nominating committee will decide on a slate of candidates, and final voting will be done among the 18 living members of the hall and a media panel, of which I've been trying to get on for 3 years, and they just keep ignoring me. Someday you're not going to be able to ignore any up.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I was surprised there were only 18 living members.
Yeah,
and I guess I shouldn't be surprised because I spent a lot of time, you know, reading through that for our awesome poker player on currency thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But kind of surprising to me, there's only 18 still alive.
Yeah, it's but you know, that's what happens when, you know, you only vote people in who are in the know from the old good old days. You know what I mean? It's starting to add up now. They're adding to those members now because the poker boom only happened recently. So, but I really want to be on that committee, so I'm gonna push a little harder again this year.
You want to be on the committee, I want to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. I'll take that.
You think they're going to... I got some cred from my 2-4 experience.
Well, the fact that you called Croker makes you a renegade, so those
yes,
are the kind of people
right.
that they want to put in the hall, so you might get in because of that.
Mixed game support. All right, and finally, Peter Falk, the legendary character actor who made Columbo. No, not our Columbo. Famous on the small screen, sadly has died recently at the age of 83.
Yeah, that's sad. I what's really sad is I thought he was already dead. I thought he died already.
You
so.
Sure are not in a Deadpool.
No, I'm kidding, of course. But that's pretty sad. Now we'll never have him on the show. That's even more sad.
Yeah, and you know, and to speak to the power of the Antigone Nation, we were in the hotel room and you're like, oh my gosh, Columbo died. I'm like, oh my God, Ray! No, not ours. I'm like, oh gosh, thanks. Because that would have been sad. I mean, not that it's not sad that Peter Falk died, but I mean, he's 83. He lived a good life.
But I was surprised that we didn't hear from our Columbo just to say, you know, hey, something. Maybe he'll chime in sooner. But now I wonder,
maybe he's grieving.
Does that ever come back now? Can that ever come back, that segment, you know, that he's dead? Well, we'll see.
Sure, why not?
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, Chris, before you landed in Las Vegas, and together we frantically visited 53 poker rooms in 5 days, I flew solo north and south of Vegas, visiting 23 rooms in the Reno, Lake Tahoe, Carson City, and Laughlin areas. And I tell you, I was busy little beaver.
You were what? Beater?
Busy little beaver.
Oh, beaver. They said beater. I was like, what? You're a busy little beater?
Yeah, I left a strewn of violence from state line to state line. Yeah, busy little beater. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I was excited that you were going alone on those trips. I was glad you were going to be out there, and I was back here wrapping up the news of the magazine. But but it sounded like a great trip. So, I mean, I'm really eager to hear what happened.
Yeah, we actually had a lot of fun on there. Saw a lot of rooms and came back with some experiences. So, you know, let's tell everybody what they can expect if they go to some of these great areas not called Las Vegas in Nevada. And I got to start off, you know, I landed in Reno. It's my first stop. at the Reno Airport. Ever been to the Reno Airport, Chris?
I have not.
All right, let me give you a little inside information that they don't tell you when you book your ticket. All right.
Okay.
I get off U.S. Airways, gate 7A or whatever it is, and I travel a lot now, so I know as soon as I get off, after I get around all the slow people walking through the jetway, I look for two things. I look for the restroom sign, and I look for the baggage claim sign.
Right.
Right? All right, so I looked up baggage claim. All right, great. So I start walking. I walk down one hallway. Woo, doo, 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 doo. Hey, I'm in Reno. This is fun. Hey, all right, baggage claim this way. Okay, turn. Get down the end of the hallway. Baggage claim this way. All right, turn. All right, baggage claim down the stairs. All right, going down the escalator. Turn. Literally, I was in that airport for 4 hours. I thought the Atlanta airport was like the purgatory of little cheese mice maze. But no, this Reno Tahoe airport, it takes just 6 hours to get the baggage claim. You know, by the seventh turn, I was expecting to see Rocky and Bullwinkle, little cardboard cutouts of them with, you're almost there. It was a crazy long walk there. So I'm hoping we have some listeners in Reno that can tell me, what the deal is with that. It wasn't even like they were forcing you past a bunch of shops to make you buy stuff for slot machines. It was just walking.
Maybe there's a shuttle that you don't know about.
Nah.
No?
I don't know. Maybe.
They just like to make everybody walk in Reno.
But I finally got to baggage claim, and despite that six-hour walk, my bag was not there yet. So I was happy when I turned around and saw the little budget rent-a-car stand there, and I'm one of these loyalist guys, and got the little the free fast break membership, right?
Yeah.
And 40 people in the general line, the steerage class, they call it. No one in the fast break line. So I walk right up. Hey, come on over. They give me my papers, give me my keys, have fun, just like that.
Sweet.
Beautiful. And then they also said, hey, we're going to get upgraded to a Mustang today. I'm like, all right.
I love that you sent me a photo of it. And I said, I know for sure that when we get our car in Vegas, we're going to get like the spec.
But here's the thing. I was excited. I get in. It's a brand new Mustang. I only had like 7 miles on it, by the way.
Jeez.
And leather seats and everything. Got excited. I went to turn it on. Went to look for the clutch. No clutch. No clutch. This is a Mustang, Chris. So I just want to let everybody know, if you're out there driving something that you're calling a sports car and it has no clutch or stick, what you're really driving is a well-disguised minivan. Do not call it a sports car, and furthermore, quit buying them, so car makers quit making them. A Mustang should have a stick. Should it not?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a fan of the manual transmission, no matter what I drive, but yeah, a sports car needs to be able to grind the gears, man. That's the whole point of having it.
You have no idea how much fun it is to drive until you drop the hammer on the freeway. And what am I supposed to do in the automatic? I'm like, all right, drop the hammer. Yep. All right, still on D. Yay,
I find when I'm driving automatics, I tend to fall asleep behind the wheel because I don't have to do anything except steer.
Keep stuff going on. I mean, here's my argument for my wife, because I always like the rack and pinion steering and everything. I like to drive a car.
Yeah.
I don't like a car to drive me.
Yeah.
The more stuff I got to do, the more fun it is to me. So, other than when I'm trying to eat french fries and stuff and shift gears with a 32-ounce Big Gulp from 7-Eleven because it's only a nickel more. But other than that...
I do have to go on record here as saying that the residents of Reno and surrounding areas, I'm sure, are thanking Budget for not making Scott Long do one more thing in the car that he has to, because he is the worst driver there is. And I mean, I am serious that I think that we're gonna have to have a talk about not when you don't get the insurance when you go rent a car. I mean, I think we might have to start considering getting it, because you are just terrible. And I'm glad that you didn't have to shift while you were driving alone and dark at night in Reno, because it's true. It's really true. I mean, I never white knuckled in my life in a car that I wasn't driving myself, but now I white knuckle when you're driving, and it's scary. I hang on to the handle for dear life.
All right. Well, are you done making fun of me? I think we should talk about poker here.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about poker.
Oh, completely poker, and you bring up all this nonsense.
Yeah, I know. Like walking 6 miles to get your bags. So that's purely poker.
All right, well, overall, I really, really enjoyed Reno. I was only there for one day. I haven't been there since I was a kid, and I barely remember that, but I definitely want to get back. First of all, it's just a real pretty place.
Yeah.
When you live here in Florida in the land of no mountains and stuff, just to see mountains is great, but you know, they have trees, they have seasons there. I really wanted to kind of spend some more time just, you know, hiking and doing stuff there. So it's a pretty place to go anyhow. And then, of course, you got the whole Lake Tahoe area, which I found was a bit of a drive. It was about an hour and a half to South Lake Tahoe, but it's doable because I did it. If I did it, you can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, I went to Lake Tahoe at night, so I didn't get any of the great view of the big-ass lake. But it's a real great area there, too, and it's also convenient, too. I'm not sure anybody would do a fly-in visit to Reno, because it's probably not that easy to get to, but almost all the poker rooms in the Reno area are, like, literally within a stone's throw from the airport.
Cool.
So you can get to them pretty quickly, and you can get around to them pretty quickly as well, too, which is kind of... it's obviously a good thing. One of the other great things is at least two of the owners of casinos in the market, the two biggest ones, Peppermill and Atlantis, are absolutely rabid
about it. They're rabid about poker?
Rabid.
Okay.
No?
No, as you broke up, I want to make sure that everything you're saying is being said to the, you know, I couldn't hear you for a second. I knew what you were going to say, but I want to make sure you said it. They're rabid about poker, their owners.
Rabid about poker, great. Support it. And I can't tell you how welcome of a change that is for most casino owners out there. I mean, the thing that we hear from a lot of poker managers is, hey, we're the redheaded stepchild. You know, at best in a lot of these casinos, poker just isn't supported. At worst, there's somebody gunning to get rid of them and put slot machines in there. And these two rooms, it's not just the owners of the you know, some kind of corporate board. It's the actual owners of the casino.
Yeah.
And, you know, they both told both his poker managers, I love poker. You know, tell me what you need. Let's make it happen. And that's really good to hear.
Very good.
And then I guess the other overall thing, too, most managers mentioned, is it's probably a saturated market. I mean, it's not a huge town there, but there are a lot of small rooms hanging on. And interesting enough, too, there's a casino right across the border in California. I think it's called Thunder Valley. Opened up a couple years ago, doing quite well. In fact, actually, I saw a story this morning that they're adding 5 more tables, so it's going to be up to, like, 21 tables. And almost every manager mentioned them and said, you know, hey, when it opened up, we knew that it was going to, you know, hurt us a little bit because it's going to take the California market away from us because no one's going to drive from California past a 16-table room to come to Reno. But what we didn't anticipate is it's actually drawing from the Reno market and taking players out of the market to drive over there. So.
Yeah.
You kind of have a big elephant in the closet there. It's about more than an hour drive, too, they told me. So it's not like it's right there. But,
right.
But obviously they must be doing something good enough to get people going on there. But most of the managers I talked to said there are a lot of small rooms hanging on. Of course, I saw them all, so I can attest to that. I didn't get a chance to talk to any of the managers of the small rooms, who I think probably would have a small different take.
Yeah.
Whether they should be eliminated or not, but what's interesting about this is, you know, when you and I travel and we talk to managers and they shake their heads talking about how they don't get much support from the ownership, you know, we give them this stock answer that we believe in, that, you know, hey, you can't judge the value of a poker room based on a spreadsheet up in the corporate offices on the 26th floor.
Right.
It's never going to look good in that sense. They're almost never going to look good. But, you know, if my wife and I go to Whoville, when there's two casinos in Whoville, one has a poker room and one doesn't, guess which one we're going to play in?
Yeah.
We're going to play in the one with the poker room. Now, they don't really give two rat's hairs about me as a poker player. I'm not going to be making the casino much money. But they need to pay attention to the fact that Laura Long is going to be with me, who's going to be playing roulette and slots, two of the biggest money makers in the casino. And the fact that you had a poker room means that's the casino that we're going to play in, not the other one. And that's what's hard for some owners, I think, to understand.
And do you think that they also have people who look at even like where the poker players are playing as well. Like, in other words, some high roller may be in, and like we had a guy I think I talked about on the show last week, the drunk guy at the Mirage. He was clearly a guy who liked to play other games, and he was just sitting in and playing. Do you think that they monitor like where the poker player goes to? Like, in other words, you know, he's playing slots as well or craps, and he's got his card there. And do you think they evaluate that, or they just look at the straight hard cold numbers? That's the thing I'm wondering about.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they look at it, but I mean, think about it from a cold robotic casino manager standpoint. If you're looking at a player's play, and he's dumping a lot of money at the blackjack table, but then he spends 3 hours in the poker room. Is that something you're excited about? No, you would rather them spend that whole 3 hours in the blackjack pit where you're going to make more money off of them. So I don't think that's a good enough argument necessarily. But, you know, the paradox of this whole thing is, you know, you got these people in Reno telling me, hey, the room's saturated. We have all these small rooms. We should probably close them down. You know, if let's say, for example, on the actual South Virginia Strip where there's a cluster of, I think, five casinos there. You know, one decent room, El Dorado, and then a bunch of other rooms that were struggling to even get one game going on a Saturday night when I was there.
Right.
If they all close down, all those players go to the El Dorado. The El Dorado becomes a better room. You know, you don't have to be walking around wondering if you have a game. So I find myself in this paradox. I'm one side of my mouth, and I strongly believe it that rooms, every casino should have a poker room or a poker product of some sort. But the other sense, I mean, when you see it in practice and you see these deathly games going on, it makes you wonder whether they should or not.
That's a conundrum that I don't think you'll ever solve. I think that's why you just let the economy solve it. I mean, really, I mean, what, you know, if you open a casino and it's brand new, then you consider it. But if it's something that's old and you're just trying to catch up with the times and there's already an established market there, it's tough to break in.
Well, it's interesting bringing that up, and we'll talk about that a little later, because there is a new room in Reno and doing some new stuff, and I'll be interested to hear your take on it. But first, let's start with a couple of the big rooms. My first stop was the Atlantis. Literally, you can see the airport from Atlantis. Absolutely an amazing manager there, B. Estes. He's I call him like a classic manager. He's been around forever.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of good stuff. He claims to be the guy who invented the buy the button.
Yeah,
because he didn't want anybody to have to sit out a hand, which is great. He also claims to be the guy who brought the Bad Beat jackpot from California to Nevada and actually had to go defend it in front of the Nevada Gaming Commission. Lots of great stories, and runs a great room there. They brought the World Poker Tour back. They're doing one of the regional events this fall, and they're hoping to get on the TV schedule next year. You know, the owner said, hey, put us on the map, and that's what B is trying to do. So, you know, right now it's already a great room, and I think he's going to try to make it even better. And one of the things I thought was really interesting is he has a special Players Club card just for poker players. And that's not completely unique. There's lots of rooms I've been to where they have separate cards or even cards that are tied. And in his room, it's the same way. The separate card is tied to your normal Players Club card, so you know you don't have two sets of comps.
Right.
But the difference is you can't just go up and ask for one. You know, I flew in town, he bought me lunch, we spent forever talking, and he's like, Scott, I can't give you one. I only give these to known players, people that I know are in the room and play often, and when they're here enough and I think they're worthy of it, I give it to them.
Wow.
And then he uses it to kind of test some things out. It's almost like his little test thing, but it's also a kind of a badge of honor.
Yeah.
And really interesting is B is a chip collector. Had a lot of chips on the wall, and it just reminds me now I didn't get Gambit even one chip on this strip, so he probably hates me. You know, I know people trade and buy chips, right, online. What I didn't know is that there's a market for Players Club cards.
Oh, no way.
And people actually buy these things, and he says in general they go for about $5 on eBay or so. But his, they're individually numbered. So, you know, if I ever get one, it'd be Scott Long, 876, whatever my order is in it. It'll have my name on it. He also gives you a card cover with your name and number on it as well, too. And he tells you, don't lose the card, because I'm not going to print you another one.
Jeez.
So don't put it in the slot machine. You know, just save it here. Use your other card in the slot machine, all that kind of stuff. And he said he's heard that one of his players that lost it, it showed up on eBay for $75.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God.
So he's sitting here telling me it's my first stop of the trip, and right before I left, I was going through all my Players Club cards, taking the ones that I thought I might use on this trip, and I came across a bunch of older ones that I'm never going to use, so I threw them away. I probably threw away $1,000. I had no idea people buy this stuff.
Wow. $75 for a card. That's crazy.
Crazy. But Atlanta's a very good room. I look for much better things coming out of that. He's only been there less than a year or so, and so that's definitely going to be a force to reckon with in Reno. Obviously, the largest room there is the Peppermill. And I got to tell you, Chris, you know me. I'm rose-covered glasses. I find something nice in everything. But I was truly floored when I walked into this poker room, more so than I think any room I've walked into anyhow in the past. They just finished. They sunk $3 million into this new room. Just opened like a month ago. Absolutely gorgeous from top to bottom. Again, this is an example of the owner really liking poker. He actually gave the poker manager there, Mike Ganey, another veteran manager who's been around everywhere. He's done a lot of good things. Took him around and said, you know, hey, where do you want a poker room? How about this space? And I believe it's an old Mexican restaurant, he said, was. So a big space, and he said, sure, I love it. And they built him a $3 million room there. It's got his own bar, which is nice. And it used to be a restaurant, so they have a galley in the back. So you actually have a, and they incorporated some of that in the room, so you have the ever desired thirst station. So you can go up there and get your sodas, and they also have a fridge with like bottles of water in it and stuff. Just walk up and get them. Brings out sandwiches for players throughout the day. Players get free soup while they're sitting there, and this
awesome.
Is on top of your normal comps, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Imagine most places you're happy if you play 4 hours, you earn $1 an hour, you get $4, you can barely afford a cup of soup at the coffee shop.
Right.
And here you get a free, plus you get the comp. So really going out of his way to be player friendly. I think he said the chairs cost like $700 each.
Oh my
God. Player chairs, they were great. They were very, very nice, very comfortable, very ergonomic. No.
Ergonomic.
Ergonomic, thank you.
Yeah.
but you know when they say that, I mean I don't know when you're back at the Times and they bought us those crap chairs and said, hey, it's ergonomic, and I sat down and I'd never been to more pain in my life.
Yeah.
And but these are complete opposite. They were very very comfortable, very nice, and the room is just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Big TVs, and quite a variety of games going on too. They had some of the higher limit games that you only see in, you know, Vegas, California, Foxwoods, you know, 20-40 games going on and bigger like that. So, very good, very good. And has a massive tournament area. You know, they just had the Jennifer Harmon charity event there not too long ago. He took me up to show me where it was. Cavernous. It's like 90,000 square feet up there, and they can put hundreds of tables up there.
Yeah, we ran a photo in our latest issue from it, and I had to crop it because it was such a big photo. And yeah. I wish I didn't have to, because it would have showed how massive this place was. It's pretty incredible.
So yeah, it's certainly the classroom there, and you know, and everybody says it too. You know, I mean, even be at Atlantis, they all say, you know, when you walk around, hey, you know, Peppermill is the class here. We're just trying to catch up to them, and that's a great compliment, I think. So from there, then I went up to what's called, I guess, South Virginia Street, or North, and it's kind of the casino cluster.
Right.
You know, if you've seen the pictures of you know, the little arch sign that says Reno, biggest little city in the world, that's where it is. And so it's a nice little bustling district there, a bunch of casinos clustered. Unfortunately, from the poker standpoint, the only big room there is the El Dorado, and it's a really good room. We mentioned, you know, as Dan said. In his call, is really well run. They get players interested there. Sad I didn't meet the Margie, the manager there, who sounds like a hoot.
Right.
But had a great lunch with Greg, one of the assistant managers, and you know, they really dominate that downtown market, I guess they call it. One of the interesting things he mentioned is that they have an ongoing 1-5 spread limit stud game. Okay, which is somewhat rare these days anyhow that you can get stud going, but, you know, 1-5 is probably standard. So that's not too unregional. What's unusual, as he says, is when there's no limit players come in and they're waiting for a table with a no limit, they don't play the 3-6 limit game, which is also always going, but they prefer to play the 1-5 stud while they're waiting.
That is weird. Especially because if you're just a no-limit player, then you still understand hold'em, so why not just play 3-6 hold'em and get your hold'em chops going while you're waiting to play stud? It's a totally different game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, when I was trying to, you know, figure it out in my mind and when I was talking to him, I mean, I guess the difference is if you're no limit player, it really frustrates you to gear down to play limit anyhow, let alone 3-6. And stud is just, you know, different. So maybe it just takes your mind off the fact that you're not, you know, getting chased down on the river with your pocket nines. They're losing to 7-2 suited.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can come up with. But it's interesting that that game not only gets the same regulars, but picks up a couple no limit players while they're waiting. And then from there, I mean, you can walk. You can literally park in one of the garages and walk to a couple other rooms. Harrah's Reno, Circus, Sands Regency are all there. Again, they're all smaller rooms. It was a Saturday night when I was there, and all of them had one game going. So I don't know if they get more tournaments or other times, but busy Saturday night with a lot of people downtown. So it kind of speaks to the saturation of the market,
yeah.
I think. And then I just accidentally, because I was too lazy to wait for the light to change across the road to get to Circus, I cut through the Silver Legacy Casino. And as soon as I walked in, I saw a sign there that said, Reno's newest poker room. I had no idea they had a poker room in all of our research. So it was lucky that I did that and found out for sure. And, you know, I turned around and there it was. It's all Poker Pro tables, Chris. I think it was like 4, maybe. Again, busy Saturday night. The only person in the room was the floor, sitting there reading a magazine, and not ours, of course, because we weren't there, because we don't know they exist. But no players playing. So I thought it was interesting that a brand new room in a market that every manager told me is saturated, and they decided to create a room, and then they staff it with poker pro tables, which, you know, say what you want about them, but most people generally don't like them.
Well, the real tragedy here is that you didn't know about that room, so that changes the effective number of how many rooms we could have visited. So, but, well, two things about this. One, last night I was watching Kingpin, and I saw Silver Legacy ads all over the place because they were in Reno for the National Bowling Center. And that made me think of this, and it was pretty funny. But the other thing is that, you know, at least they're offering a product that's not in the area. If they're going to try to spring up with a new room, they're trying something different. Maybe they'll capture the casual player who's not going to be intimidated by the chips and the cards and the handling of the cards and all that. Maybe that's the way to go, is to try to just, you know, the online player who wants to play that way, or the casual, you know, wife and husband walking by who think it's fun to play without having to really embarrass themselves by grabbing chips and betting them or whatever. So yeah. Maybe it's because it's a different product. It's a good way to go. I don't know if it'll last, but it's different. So maybe they have a chance.
Well, you know, and we talked about this to a couple of folks in Vegas, because I was mentioning just how odd this was to turn around and see a brand new Poker Pro room in this market. And, you know, some of them did mention some things that I always forget, the advantages of Poker Pro. One of them is be able to offer, like, you know, $10 or $15 tournaments.
Yeah.
Or something that just doesn't make sense from a labor standpoint, where, you know, you can run it with one guy in the room, you know, pushing a button on the computer. So, you know, maybe they'll get somewhere with it. It was just really interesting, I thought, to see it. Obviously, we wish everybody the best of luck as they do things, but be interested when other people go to Reno to let us know whether it's taken off there or not. And then the next biggest room in the area is Grand Sierra. It's been a number of different things. I think it used to be called the Reno Hilton in the day. It used to have the World Poker Tour years ago. WPT hasn't been in the market for, I think, 3 years. I think that's what B told me.
Yeah.
So it's been rebranded the Grand Sierra. I didn't get a chance to talk to anyone there, but I know that they have a tournament series coming up that they've been advertising in other places, and so I imagine they're trying to, you know, capture that market and move up from the fourth to third biggest room, whatever they might be. But we're looking; those are the four big rooms, you know, Atlantis, Peppermill, El Dorado, and Grand Sierra, and they're four good rooms. So
yeah.
You know, you got things to do there. There's lots of other smaller rooms around, not just on that area. There really aren't destinations. I couldn't really recommend that you go out of your way to get to them. But to be honest, you're not getting out of your way anyhow. You know, I was able to make them all in like a 5-minute drive from one to the next. But there are lots of other rooms in the area. Not really anything necessarily individually exciting about them, but plenty of poker around the area. And then I headed south, went all the way down to South Lake Tahoe. When I planned this trip, I didn't realize how far it was. I think I mentioned it's like, what, about an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Less. In the last half hour is Kirby Rose as you're getting into the mountains. The big shock to me, Chris, was, you know, you think of Nevada, and I know this isn't right, but when you think of Nevada, you think of Vegas, you think of the desert, you think of it being 120 degrees, me walking down the strip in jeans, you laughing at me for sweating. So you automatically think that all Nevada is just this oven, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I landed in Reno, it was pretty hot there. I'm in the car for an hour and a half driving to South Lake Tahoe. The Mustang, even though it didn't have a clutch or a stick, did have a thermometer in there. And when I was pulling into the first casino in South Lake Tahoe, that thermometer said 50 degrees.
Oh, man.
Talk about a shock. Wow. I got out and walked into the first room, a little lodge-like place, I believe it's called Lakeside Inn, and people were actually wearing ski outfits while they're playing poker.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, man, I'm going to cover an hour. But South Lake Tahoe, unfortunately, from a poker standpoint, not great. Harvey's, which is owned by the Caesars and Harrah's, it's the center of action. Massive room. They had 11 tables going on a Saturday night. Kept filling it. No wait list either. People just kept, they kept finding places to get people in. So certainly a great room if you find yourself in South Tahoe. Definitely play there. You're going to have a good time and a good variety of games. But the other two rooms in the area... one on a Saturday night was just getting their first game going, Mon Bleu, when I was leaving town like at 10 or 11 at night. And the other one was a lakeside that, like I said, was a small little four-table room, kind of an amenity place. So not really a destination to go to play poker, but it's a good destination. It was a nice little resort area. So a good place probably to walk around, and then you could play at Harvey's.
Cool.
On the way back then, I hit Carson City. They got three small rooms there. Like I said, I missed one of them, unfortunately. but again, they're not destinations, but little places to keep you going as you make the drive between Reno and Tahoe. And so I finally get back to the Peppermill. Mike was nice enough to put me up for the night. And gorgeous hotel rooms. Very big. Which is great. I always like when I get the big hotel room when I'm only sleeping there for like 6 hours, 5 hours. So, you know, remember I got up on East Coast time, flew from Florida to Phoenix, from Phoenix to Reno, and then drove all the way around Reno, Carson City, Lake Tahoe, back, dead tired. I've been up for 23 straight hours. I go to bed, and boom! All of a sudden, the room was filled with sun, and I'm like, oh my gosh, did I miss my flight again? And how can this happen again? I pop up, and wow, I ran around, and it says 5:30 on the clock.
And the sun was up?
Sun was up, blazing.
Oh my God.
Blazing. So I ended up only getting a couple hours sleep. I was supposed to sleep an hour and a half. And you know what's funny about this is the two people I travel with most are you and my wife.
Right.
Both of you do two things as soon as you walk in a hotel room that I hate you for. Both of you crank the AC down to it turns into an igloo in the room. And you both seal up the curtains so not one speck of light gets in the place.
That's right.
So what I do is I sort of get in there, I knit like all the bath towels into a shawl to try to keep warm through the night. And in the middle of the night, it's so dark in there that I end up sleeping, hanging upside down from the rafters. I think I'm checking into the Red Roof Inn, but no, I'm checking into Batman and Penguin's Love Child lair. Complete dark, cold, damp place. It totally blew me away. To wake up, and so I like to keep the drapes open so I can see the moonlight and stuff, and it came to back bite me.
Man, I you have to, one because I always sleep on the other side of the room, and it's always the window is always over there. I don't want that light on waking me up in the morning. It's bad. I get no sleep as it is with you honking and snoring over there. So last thing I need is another thing contributing to me not being able to sleep. And then, you know, whenever we're together, we're usually in a hot climate, so I always turn the air down because it's hot in there. That's another thing I don't want to wake me up. I don't wake up sweaty all night, so I turn the air down. What do you want from me, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want you to make it comfortable for me, but I can't win that argument with wife either. all right, my last note from Reno, too, is when I was talking to B2, and I meant to mention this, he was like, you know, hey, Scott, I was talking to my assistant manager, and all of a sudden one of our dealers heard me talking. Corey came in. He's like, oh, my gosh, Annie Up, that's the greatest show ever. And sat there and talked to me for half an hour about you guys. So I want to give a shout-out to Corey, the dealer there. It's so cool that we make these trips, and there's people that know us around the country, around the world, I guess, and are doing their part to let other people know that we're working hard here. So certainly appreciate that.
Yeah, much thanks.
To Corey and everybody else that does it. All right, well, the next morning, obviously, after I realized I didn't oversleep, I caught my flight to Vegas, drove down to Laughlin, and we'll get through this pretty quickly here because here's what I can say about Laughlin. I go there pretty often because I have relatives there. Certainly not a poker destination, but I would call it a destination. It's kind of like the small, old-school resort town.
Uh-huh.
Bunch of small casinos right along the Colorado River, so I mean, there's a lot of other stuff you could do, you know, boating and things like that. It's great. It's a great little respite from the hustle and bustle of Vegas. I don't know about you, but I always get tired when I'm in Vegas.
It's exhausting.
I'm not that kid anymore that can handle the lights and the 24 hours and the drinking and stuff, and it's just so busy there. Laughlin, completely different. The average age of guests down there is probably 96. So it's a much slower area, and it's just a good, relaxing place to go. It's only about an hour and a half south of Vegas. The last 30 minutes of the drive are really gorgeous through these mountains. Really, you just go down there and relax, and it's cheap. I mean, the hotel rooms are cheap. The food's cheap. Gambling's cheap. I used to play $2 craps down there. Just a good place to go to get away. And the good thing is they do have poker down there. Not the bustling big rooms. You're not going to find the Bellagio down there, but definitely places you can play.
What's the game down there that they like to play?
Yeah, what's really curious is they love the 2-6 spread limit down there with a single $2 blind.
And, huh.
You know, I almost never see this game anywhere. I saw it maybe in one Vegas room when we were there. Probably some bunch of Laughlin people brought it up there and it spread. I don't see it anywhere else, but it's a 2-6 spread limit and a single $2 blind. And I talked to a couple of managers, and they're like, you know, we're trying to introduce some other things, but they just like that game. So, you know, occasionally you'll find a no-limit hold'em game, most of the rooms run some fairly cheap daily tournaments. But you're going down there planning to play a 2-6 spread limit.
Wow.
Single $2 blind.
That's pretty cool.
All right, well, let me run through the rooms here pretty quickly. All the rooms are on, like, the strip right there on the Colorado River, except for one, Avi. And it's a short drive out of town. It's almost down into Arizona. In fact, actually, you cross into Arizona at some point driving there, which is pretty cool. And what's interesting about it, it's the only tribal casino in all of Nevada, Chris.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, we think about it here in Florida, we have a bunch. You know, Oklahoma, they're all tribal. You know, lots of other places, Minnesota, Michigan. Nevada, a place with more than 80 rooms, almost 90 rooms, only one of them is tribal.
Wow. That is interesting.
But a small room there, a nice little casino, a nice little pool area and stuff. So it might be worth a drive, and there's some other stuff down around to do there. But the rest of them are on the strip. Harrah's, like most Harrah's properties, attracts the younger crowd. It's probably your best shot in town of finding no limit hold'em. I think they had like a 1-2 game going when I was there. The second biggest in the area is Don Laughlin's Riverside Resort, which is on the opposite side of the strip. Don Laughlin's the guy who invented the town.
I would say he's the guy who owns the town, right?
Yeah, he still lives there. The new manager there is a veteran manager, Jim Vincent. He used to run the biggest room in town, Colorado Bell, been there forever. Is now at the Riverside Resort and trying to do some new stuff there and get things going at the Riverside Resort. Also, the River Palms is there. It's a nice little room that's tucked away from the bustle of the casino. You know, we always laugh when we go on these trips. We walk in and we try to figure out where the poker room is.
Yeah.
Without looking at signage. Usually it's right near the race book, race and sports book. I walked around for a while in this one before I finally had to give up on being a guy and not asking for directions and finally figure out where it was. And it was separated away from the actual casino, which I know a lot of people like. They don't like to hear the dinging of the slot machines and, you know, the smoke drifting in. So that's definitely a place to go do that. Golden Nugget has a brand new room there. You know, they're doing great things up in Vegas. They're getting ready to open a room in Atlantic City, trying to get on the map. They've done some special tournaments in Laughlin in the past, and they just created a room, four-table room, just trying to get some traction going in the city. I stumbled into the Pioneer by accident, found out it wasn't a room that I thought had poker, and sure enough, they got two tables in the pit, you know, right by the blackjack table.
Yeah.
No one playing when I was there, but it was on a Sunday. But a small little room there. And then, obviously, the biggest room in the area is Colorado Bell. They also own the Edgewater, which is right next door. It's a small room under the same management. But the Bell is the biggest room in town, and I really thought it was nicely themed. It's the Colorado Bell, just like you think. It's a riverboat, but it doesn't go anywhere. It's moored there.
Right.
And not even, like, docked. It's, like, you know, just built that way.
Right.
They do some really good art in the room, the old riverboat gamblers there, so you kind of feel like you're in a nice room. They had the 2-6 spread limit like they do everywhere. But they played it here, the 2-6 with a full kill.
Hmm.
So it becomes like a 4-12 game when you get the kill. And I'm going to bring up a strategy discussion here. Interesting what you think about it. Generally, when you play a kill in a hold'em game, you know, in a split pot game, if you scoop, it's a kill. But in a hold'em game, you usually have to win two pots in a row.
Yeah.
So they call the first one the leg up. They give you a little leg up button. And then when you win the second one, it becomes a kill, and you have to post your kill, and it plays bigger. And generally, there's a pot minimum in here.
Okay.
So I've been playing for a while, and I saw someone raise and take the blind. Again, it's a single $2 blind, right?
Yeah.
Raise, took the blind, and got the leg button.
Ooh.
And I'm like, wow, you only have to win a $2 pot to get a leg? And I thought that you could just win two in a row, but I won a second one after I did that, and I said, hey, is it a kill pot? And he's like, no, it has to be $10 on the second leg. But regardless, I started thinking in my head here, you know, it's tough to beat these 2-6 games or 2-4 games, beat the rake on them. So if you can play bigger and you feel you're a better player at the table, you want to get that game bigger. So what I started doing is when I won the first leg... I stayed in the next one just to see whether I could win that second one, even if it wasn't a great hand, because I wanted to get that game to a 4-12 where I thought I was going to be able to profit more. And I knew the pot didn't have to be that big, so I could do it pretty regularly. So we had a lot of kill pots in this game. So is that a sound strategy, do you think, knowing that you don't have to play big pots to get it to a big game?
You know, I think we talked a little bit about this, and I felt like it didn't seem sound to me to if you win one pot and then to automatically ride the rush on the next hand, whether it was a marginal hand or not, and to just to try to get to another level to play a third hand that you hope will play to your advantage if you happen to have good cards on that hand or a good position on that hand. It just seems like you know, everything has to align for it to continue to be profitable for you, and the risk that you take by staying in a hand that you may not normally stay in just to hope to win that hand, to hope to get to a level that you'd feel comfortable with, and then in that, once you're at that level, to hope to get the cards or the position that you need to be profitable, and just for that one hand, because it'll go away if you don't win it again. To me, it sounds like a lot of work to try to get to 4-12, and I would just say, you know, I'm just not going to play this game, and I'm going to go somewhere else, which I know is not a choice here in this town, because it's always 2-6, and at least they have a kill in this one casino, but to me, it sounds like it's a lot of work to get to one level to try to win that one hand, and even if you don't win, it goes right back down to the 2-6, which you start all over again, and I just feel like there's a flaw in that.
Well, I guess the flip side is, too, is the game was a little bit tight. So, you know, with the spread, I mean, you can make it 8 to go pre-flop.
Right.
And so when you did that, almost every time somebody made it 8 to go, they picked up the blind. No one called them. So, you know, if you just keep doing the $8 and now you're halfway there, and then you can make a decision on the second leg whether you want to play. But remember, on the second leg, you got to post a $4 blind.
Yeah.
So if it's not raised and you get the last action, you get to see a flop for free, in a sense. I mean, it's not free yet to put the $4 in, but you're forced to. So I guess that's kind of what I was looking at, is that you can exploit the first hand not being $10, get a free look at the flop in the second hand, and if you hit, or definitely hit better, but if you hit at all, then maybe you have a shot at getting it to that 4-12, and at that point, then you can play proper poker but just know you're going to get paid off more.
Well, the other thing, too, is you don't post a 4 unless it's a 4-12 game. So you've won 2 in a row, but you risked the second hand, the second pot is the one where you're taking a chance that you're playing that hand because you want to try to win 2 in a row, and that's when you're playing the marginal hand.
Yeah, it's essentially
not the kill hand.
Try to get a higher game. So I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I think that if you're playing 2-6, there's got to be a way that you can 3-bet people to scare them out or make it play bigger. Or, of course, you were saying it was a tight game, so they were folding. I don't know. I don't know. It just seems to me that that's a lot of work to try to make a game bigger. If that's the only game you got in town, maybe that's your strategy. I don't know. It just seems like to me that middle hand there where you have to win to make it a kill and then you have to put $4 up, you're actually like losing money because you have to put $4 in. So it's like taking 4 off the win that you had on the second hand that made the kill hand. It just seems like a lot of work for, you know, to try to get to that level to me. I don't think it's a good strategy.
Well, it's interesting at least to talk about, but that's a look at the rooms elsewhere in Nevada. And of course, there are a couple other rooms that are not in these areas. You know, a good friend Jody used to run the rooms in Wendover, which are over by the Utah border, and then a couple scattered around the state. But I think it's interesting so people know that there's poker outside of Vegas.
Well, I'm glad that you made the trip, and I'm glad that I didn't. Because that's too much travel for me. It really is. I don't travel well. I don't like to travel, and to have to do what you did on top of what we did, that's just way too much getting in and out of a car and looking at poker rooms for me. So I'm glad that you could handle it, and we're the better for it. So thanks for going.
Hi, this is Team Poker Stars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you are listening to the Ante Up PokerCast.
You gotta fight for your right to play!
Our hand of the week comes from St. Gilmore, across the pond, Chris.
Is that a town or a person?
That's a person.
Okay.
That's his handle.
Okay.
Is it her handle? I'm sorry.
Right.
I shouldn't know. Going back old school to No Limit Hold'em here.
Oh, wow.
I think we can dial back down.
Is it crappy No Limit Hold'em?
It's not Croker.
Oh, okay.
No Limit Hold'em, it's a tournament. One of these daily double tournaments on a site not affiliated with Ante Up and no longer in business.
I wonder which one that one is.
And we're at the 6120 level here. And our hero has 2,700 in chips, and looking around the table, most people are somewhere between 23 and 3,000, but we do have a big stack of 12,000 and a couple in the 7 to 5 range.
Okay, what were the blinds again?
6,120.
Okay.
So early on, lots of play. We have one caller, folds around to the button who calls. Small blind gets out of the way. We're in the big blind with deuce of diamonds, jack of spades.
Okay, so it folds to us and there's no raise. So
yeah,
obviously.
One limper, two limpers, and small blind's out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're just a maniac and whatever and you want to just raise to steal the blinds, obviously we're just checking and seeing a flop here. So
absolutely. All right, so we check to see the flop. Flop comes deuce of clubs, deuce of hearts, nine of spades. So we flop trips.
I love that.
Or a set if you're in Vegas. I can't tell you how many people called it a set.
Well, I love that flop.
With three people, and there was an unraised pot.
The thing about you don't want to go broke in an unraised pot, but I think you're safe in just checking here and going for a check raise because you're in the blinds, and what you're expected to do here is check because you didn't hit any of this, and hopefully the limpers didn't have a suited ace deuce. I feel comfortable just checking here and trying to trap somebody.
A couple things here. One, it's not a coordinated board. We're not worried about flushes or straights getting there on the next card, so it's not like you worry about giving a free card. And second is, and I noticed that, and I use this to my advantage too, is when someone from the blinds bets out on a board like this, people fold.
Yeah.
So we don't want them to fold here. Conversely, when I see a board like this and I'm in the blind, I probably will put out a bet just to see whether I can get everybody to fold, depending on what my hand is. But I'd rather check here. You know, hopefully somebody will bet. And if not, you know, no big deal. We probably weren't going to get called anyhow, right?
Right.
All right, that's exactly what our hero does. He checks. First play, player does bet 120. And the button raises to 360.
Hmm.
Gets to us. I mean, is this... is there a better situation for us here than checking, thinking we have the best hand and someone bets and someone raises?
Well, you're always setting me up. So you're always setting me up. These are hands of the week. They're not sending in hands of the week when we're winning massive pots and gloating. So
sometimes
it's tough. It's tough to say, is there a better position? Yeah, I'd rather have pocket deuces right now. But other than that, you know, you got to think that your trips are ahead. So I don't know. If this guy's raising, maybe he's got a hand that he thinks is really good, and I don't want this. Was it the small blind that bet out? So, right? Yeah. No. We were the
gun.
Yeah. So under the gun. So I don't know if I want the end of the gun in the hand now. I think I'd like to be heads up. I don't know if just calling 360 is going to be enough to get the under the gun guy out. So maybe I'll bet again. Maybe I'll raise again. Now that we've gotten some money, I mean, I'm happy with winning that 480 plus whatever was in the pot before, like 360 or whatever. That's a pretty decent pot considering I only have 2,700 chips. It's early on. I don't want to. You know, I mean, I don't mind playing a big pot, but I'd rather not if I don't have to.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting about this situation is if we raise here again, we have to be telegraphing our hand now, right?
I think no matter what we do, we're telegraphing unless we fold.
I mean, there's no way that there's a bet, a raise, and a re-raise from the small blind, and we have anything but what we say we have, or pocket nines if somebody doesn't have pocket nines. At that point, I mean, I got to figure... maybe the under gun was just taking a stab, thinking it was a crappy board and no one had anything. Might take it down when he gets raised. You know, it could be a couple things. I mean, it could be something as weak as an ace nine or something.
Right.
It's impossible to really make that leap that we're behind here based on the action. But when we re-raise out of the blinds, then I think we're saying, hey, I got the goods here. So I guess my worry would be, is chasing people out with hands that probably don't have a chance to catch up to us.
Well, the other thing, though, really, is if you just call here, you're telling the whole world that you have a deuce two, or that you have a nine. I mean, what hand are you calling with? Fives, maybe? I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe a smaller pocket pair than nines, but why would you just call there? I don't know. I feel like a raise and a call kind of hurts us. I think no matter what we do, we're telling them we have a good hand.
All right, you know what? You won me over there, so you're right. Since we're going to tell them what we have, we might as well raise here and find out how good our hand is.
Yeah, because and the other thing, too, is you know, just a call. I mean, you're obviously not drawing. So, I mean, it could be something like 8-9, and you're calling with your nines. But then again, you might want to raise to get one guy out and go heads up with your pair.
Yeah,
because you think the other guy's just stealing. We're going to find out real quick either way, I think. But I think I might raise here.
All right, so he made a 3x the 360. What do you
probably make it 1,000 to go?
All right, so then we got to think about our chip stack too. So obviously, I mean, we're
2,700.
Even before the raises, I think we were pretty committed to this hand after the flop, right?
Right. I mean, you could just shove here, but that seems like an overkill. I mean, I want somebody to call me with like ace nine, you know.
Right.
So if I shove, then he knows I have a deuce. I don't know. I mean, maybe he thinks his ace nine is good, or 10-9 is good, or something. Or maybe he thinks his tens are good, or eights are good, and limped with him. Maybe 900 to 1,000.
Okay.
I mean, a min raise is interesting, but that just totally shouts that you have a deuce.
Or you're scared too, which is the other thing I've noticed too. Is, you know, when the pot gets bet and then raised, someone wants to make a raise, but they can't fully commit to that proper raise.
Yeah.
So that's when they do the min raise. So I think to a smart player, they would look at a mid-raise as, you know, hey, I'm trying to suck you in. But I think a lot of players I see at lower limits, it's just a scared defensive raise.
And it is interesting.
I think it's
bet.
Weird to put 1,000 into a pot. You know?
It's an interesting pot, too, because you know, the mid-raise might be enough to get the under-the-gun guy out anyway, because at that point it would be
right.
700, so it would be, you know, a good... What did he bet when he came out? 120? Yeah, so it'd be...
120, and that's...
600
that's
more, then.
Had about the same chip stack we did. So.
Yeah, so that'd be another 600 to him, and that might be enough to get him out. So the min raise might be interesting here, but again, to me, if the person who had re-raised or had raised is sort of savvy. He's going to know that you have to have something here to do that move. So I don't know. It's an interesting quandary here because there are a lot of moves that you can make that telegraphy hand, but at the same time, you got to do something. You know, if you just call, they could read it as you have a huge hand, and if you just min raise, it's a huge hand, and if you re-raise, then it's, you know, all those things to me tell me it's a big hand. So I don't know. Obviously you're not folding, so I think I make it 900 to 1,000.
Okay. Well, our hero just called, and the under the gun player called as well too. So all three of us go to the turn, which is the 10 of clubs. So our board now is deuce of clubs, deuce of hearts, 9 of spades, 10 of clubs.
Jeez.
And we remain first to act.
Yeah, now I got a bet. So we got three players calling 360. So that's 1380, and then so there's that's missing my stack. I mean, really, it's more than my stack.
And should also be noticed too that the button who raised has fewer chips than we do, and the end of the gun has us covered at the beginning of the hand by only 80.
Well, the thing about shoving here is that you're not like you're trying to keep a draw off of making their hand, because there was no draw there. So they have to have something, and whether or not we could be beat. That's the scary thing now, but right. Another call there means that, I mean, what could they have unless they both have nines in their hands, or somebody has like eights, and I hate to think that somebody has eights and didn't raise here preflop. I mean, it's possible, but you know, you'd think that somebody would raise with a pocket pair in a game like this.
Well, you know, we talked a lot about how we thought we were telegraphing our hand. The more I think about it, I wonder if we did. Because this is such a board that no one thinks anybody has anything. And also, that if you have any pocket pair at all, you probably think your hand is good.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's true. That's
I mean, obviously we had a raise, and so, I mean, that changes something a little bit. But, I mean, it's such a weird board that a lot of people probably feel confident on that kind of board.
Well, if you're under the gun and you're calling a re-raise and then a call behind that, you know, and you're out of position for at least one of the players, then you're saying you got to have something here. You don't want to be out of position with nothing.
Yeah, and that one almost... I'm trying to figure out whether I can put that under the gun person on pocket nines. They were under the gun, didn't raise, which a lot of people probably don't raise with pocket nines under the gun.
Right.
Because, you know, you have so many more people to come, you're just willing to set mine, particularly with this kind of stack. You know, and then you put out the minimum bet on the flop, hoping that you're going to extract some value. That's in line with that. And then someone raises and you just call. That's in line with it, too. So, you know, I would not be surprised. I'm not saying that the end of the player has pocket nines, but I would not be surprised at the end of the hand they turn over pocket nines here.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that bet after the flop. If I had pocket nines and had that monster, I have that deck crippled, and no one's going to beat me. I got to let somebody catch up. So I don't think that I...
Yeah, but it's a board that...
I bet there.
It's different. It's not a board that I think people are scared of. So, I mean, you put out the minimum bet, I don't know. I might take a stab there to see if I can get a couple, two overs to call me.
But really, it's a board that people would miss. If you have ace-king or king-queen or jack-10, you've missed this board completely. Any bet's going to scare you away. You have the deck crippled. There's no reason to
that.
Bet there. This isn't limit poker, Scott. You're playing limit poker again.
No, but I'm playing a low-limit, no-limit tournament here.
But still, I mean, again...
People are going to call with overcards on a board like that. They're going to say, hey, I don't believe you. You don't have a deuce. You don't have a nine. I've got king-queen. I could hit a king or queen on the next card, and you're only going to make it 120 to go? Sure, I'll play along.
Yeah, you just said 5 minutes ago that you like to bet when these boards happen because you think nobody has anything, and they're going to fold to any bet. So, you know, you can't contradict
yourself.
From
the blinds, not from under the gun. Under the gun's a different position.
Under the gun would be more scary because the guy came in under the gun. He could have limped with aces. I just don't believe it. I don't think that somebody would bet crippling the deck.
The blinds because the deuce is there. I mean, you're not going to be playing a deuce under the gun.
I just don't think you're going to. If you have pocket nines, you're not going to bet out here. You've crippled the deck, and no one's going to call you unless they have a deuce. And why bet? You know what I mean? Let somebody catch up. If they have ace-king, let them catch up and hit a king on the turn. You know, I just can't. I can't see somebody with a full house betting here. If it happened, then color me embarrassed, but I doubt it.
All right. Well. So,
what are we doing?
Yeah.
I was talking a lot inevitably to try to avoid this situation here. I don't know. Maybe I just I have like 2,300 left, and there's probably about that in the pot now. The 19, you know, yeah, close to that.
I think at this point, your decision has to be whether you're going to get all your chips in this hand or not.
Yeah.
And if you decide you're going to get all, you're not going to be able to fold this hand, then I think you need to push.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I can get away from this.
You could think that you're behind. You could be behind a pocket nines, pocket tens, and worried about that. But if you're worried about that, then you should be worried about putting your chips in if somebody else makes that bet.
Right.
And if you're saying, well, I could be behind, but I'm going to call anyhow, then don't call. Push it in now. There's enough in the pot now that the shove makes sense.
It feels like it could be ace, nine, nine, ten, the hands that we're up against, eights, sevens. Right. So I have no problem shoving here. And if it was ace, deuce, then... I mean, it could be a suited ace deuce, so. But I think it's likely that the guy who raised has ace deuce and was hoping.
Well, that's another thing, too. I keep forgetting that there's three deuces that are better than us.
Yeah, there's a lot of deuces that beat us, so.
Four deuces, actually, yeah.
But, again, of course, I don't have a problem betting 50% of my stack, even though they tell you if you're going to bet 50, you might as well shove. But if I was going to make a regular bet, it would be about 1,000 to 1,500 here, which is. Might as well just shove. So, yeah, I guess I'd shove here.
Yeah, and I guess I should say I didn't mean that you could either just shove or check here. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's just a matter of whether you're willing to put your stack in. I mean, we're talking in a sense that we feel like we might be behind when most likely we're way ahead right now.
Yeah.
So we're trying to extract value, too. So, I guess my point in bringing that up is just that I would hate for us to make any kind of bet here and then call it off. Feeling that we're behind.
All right.
But certainly, you're right. I think probably somewhere, we don't have to put our whole stack in here. I mean, a good enough bet that we think we'd get called off. And if someone raises us, then, you know, hey, that's fine. We made a stab. It wasn't like we played it weekly, right?
Right. I think that when you flop trips, you got to be ready to go for it. You know, and especially, you're going to have a ton of chips, and you're going to be up as one of the chip leaders here, which is what your goal is in one of these low buy-in tournaments. So, I have trips. These guys could. There's a lot of hands that I can put them on that don't beat me. And a proper bet here commits more than 50% of my stack, so I might as well just shove. So I guess I'm shoving.
Yeah. We shove our hero checks.
Hmm.
And surprisingly, may or may not checks around.
That is surprising. I'm going to hate it if we get rivered like a five to a pocket five or something. That's going to suck. Yeah, I don't like the check there, just because this reason right here, are you letting pocket eights try to hit a two-outer, or pocket sevens hit a two-outer, or, you know, something like that. I don't like the check at all. I want to get my money in now while I'm good, and if they don't have a hand that beats me or can't call me, then I'm taking down a pretty decent pot, and I'm one of the chip leaders now. And if I'm wrong and they have me beat, well, you know, it's just poker.
So. Well, the other thing, too, is we mentioned it's probably illogical to think that anybody has straight cards now, or even maybe clubs. But both of those are possible down the turn. And, you know, maybe they had some kind of hand combination that allowed for that, and now you're giving them a free card to hit a flush or a straight.
Right. Well, and again, too, though, if we were going with your theory before of two overs, if somebody called that, they could have king, queen, jack, or something.
Jack,
so
queen.
Yeah, that could happen, too. So now I'm really pissed off that I checked.
Okay, queen, jack of clubs.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I'm really not happy about the check.
All kinds of problems there. You know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, we're excited about our trips, but if somebody else does have a trip that's smaller than us, which seems illogical here,
right.
Every card we give them is one more card they can boot up.
Right.
So, I mean, really, the turn, I think you got to get some money in here.
Yeah.
It's not a...
Don't ever give the turn for free if you don't have to.
All right, well, it checks around. Our river is the 10 of hearts, so our final board is deuce of clubs, deuce of hearts, 9 of spades, 10 of clubs, 10 of hearts. So we boat up, but I'm not sure we're ecstatic about boating.
No, that's a horrible card. Horrible card. Although there was a couple of times I was playing out in Vegas that guys were betting with the bottom of the boat just like this, and it was good. I was like, really? But this is not good for us, because even if, you know, somebody came along because they had Jack 10 or something, which I doubt would happen. I can't imagine somebody has a 10 here, though, because why would they have bet, raised, and then called a raise with a 10 in their hand? And what 10 do they have, unless it's 10 deuce? And why would they have been playing 10 deuce willingly? You know, they weren't in the blinds. So maybe our boat's good here. I don't know. I can't put anybody on a 10 here.
But here's the problem. Even if our boat is good, our check on the turn killed our hand. And I don't mean killed our hand in terms that we can't win. It killed our ability to really bet with confidence.
Yeah. I mean, 9-10 is the only hand that I have somebody on here that, and that's very conceivable. Somebody can limp with 9-10 very easily. Somebody could bet out with 9-10 here, and somebody could call a raise and re-raise with 9-10 here. So 9-10 is the only hand that beats us, and I think I'm checking now. Check calling.
Well, ace-10 has us beat, too.
No, but I mean, that makes sense in this hand. No one's going to play ace-10, I don't think, after the bet and the raise.
I don't know. I really do think two overs would have called on that flop.
Okay, so do you think ace-10 bets out? Answer my question. Do you think ace-10 bets out on that flop?
On the flop?
Right.
I don't think they...
No, they don't bet out ace-10. The person bet out. Does ace-10 raise here on the flop after someone bets out? No. Nobody has ace-10 here.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think 9-10 is the only hand that makes sense to me. I mean, I could be wrong, you know, we're stupid, but maybe. But to me, no, really, 9-10 is the only hand that makes sense. Or it's the only 10 I can put somebody on legitimately here the way the action went.
But in terms of going forward with your poker career, this is kind of what I see is, and it happens to me often, you flop big, you try to be a little tricky, the turn comes, you check, and then you don't get that bet in.
Yeah.
And the river comes, and it's a scary card. I mean, think about it, whether this would have been a club, or whether it would have been a jack, something that would have completed some draws, which we thought were unlikely anyhow. But then what do you do? Because you messed up that turn, you almost got to, like, shut down on the river again and check call. And you lose a lot of value there. So, I mean, I guess the overall point is not so much in this hand, but in general, is to get that bet in on the turn. Because, you know, you hit the neuter. Two of the streets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you hit trips, you want to get paid off for them, and you've now by checking, you've lost two streets to bet because you didn't check the turn, and now you really can't bet this river unless somebody has nine. You know, if somebody has 9-10, you know you're beat. Other than that, I mean, you're not comfortable, but you might still be ahead. I'm not comfortable betting the river now.
Yeah, and I see this a lot actually when I flop like a baby flush.
Yeah.
You know how rare it is to flop a flush anyhow, and you flop a baby flush, and it's pretty strong, and you try to get sneaky there, you check call, the turn you check, hoping to get that bet in, and you miss it, and then the river of the board pairs, and you're like, ugh.
Or another of the suit comes, and then you're beat by one high
exactly.
card.
I mean, yeah, I just give up the hand, and then, oddly it seems, and it's just totally anecdotal, I have no stats on it, oddly at the end it seems like I end up having the best hand there anyhow, and I just lose because I'm not willing to put that bet in.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think that's the situation we're in here, just a different one.
I think I'm checking and calling a reasonable bet.
I think you have to at this point. I mean, we went through the whole thing here. It's tough to imagine anybody having anything better than us now, but now if I put a small bet in and someone raises me now, I mean, it's a different story than it was on the turn or the flop when we talked about getting it all in.
Right.
All right, well, hero checks. The under the gun puts in another min bet, 120. The button calls the 120, and it's back to us.
120 I'm calling. That's nothing. I mean, I want to see what they have, too, so I know how they play. You know, there's almost 2,500 or 2,800 in the pot or whatever for $120, and I've got a full house. I'm calling. I want to see what they have and see how they played the hand. So
I don't think there's any doubt we're calling. I guess
I'm not raising. I'm not raising. No. There's no reason to raise. We went over this. We were not confident, so there's no reason to raise. I'll take the extra 240 if I'm good and just be happy with it.
Well, our hero decides to raise.
Oh, see, and I was just about to start agreeing with St. Gilmore, and you know, because he checked the river, but no, I don't raise there. What are you hoping? What are you getting called by? Another deuce? You know what I mean? You're only splitting the pot here at best. I can't raise here.
All right. Well, as surprising as that raise was, get this, Chris. He gets two callers.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like someone has a 10, someone has a deuce, or, you know, someone has a 9, someone has a deuce. The callers are interesting, because if they just call, then they wouldn't have a 10. Wow, he might be ahead now. That's kind of weird.
All right, well, our two opponents muck. We rake in a nice pot of 25.80.
Oh, man, you gotta be kidding.
The end of the gun player... Trey of diamonds, Trey of spades.
Well, it's the middle medium. I mean, it's the little pair we thought it might be, but not that far. I didn't think you'd take that hand that far.
Very interesting. I'm just kind of dumbfounded on that, how that played out.
Well, clearly that player doesn't know what he's doing. All he did was min bet when he did bet and then call re-raises, so hey, he's not a very good player.
And then the button, who raised on the flop, ace of spades, nine of clubs.
Hey, ace nine. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, early on, I can't believe he would call, though. It's tens and nines with an ace kicker now.
Well, I can kind of see... I can almost see everything that this guy did. I mean, he, you know, ace nine, not a great hand, but he's on the button, has position pre-flop, one limper. All right, we'll call, we'll see. You know, I'm a little scared of the under the gun limped with my ace, but, you know, whatever. Flop comes, deuce, deuce, nine. All right, now the guy bets out, now I'm going to raise, take this down. And then all of a sudden, the small blind wakes up and calls.
Yeah.
And then the other guy calls. At that point, there's a lot of money in. You take a shot, maybe, that you'll hit an ace or a nine, preferably a nine on the turn. Doesn't come. Checks around, so there's no reason to put any money in. And then the river comes, and somebody puts in this ridiculous 120 bet. Well, I'm not going to go anywhere for 120, which is what you said.
Yeah.
So the only weird thing is then calling the raise at the end. I mean, you can't really think that your nine's good there.
Right.
But at that point, you're talking about throwing away a hand for another 240, you know,
again,
10
11,
times
12.
Money.
Yeah, 12 yeah. times your money, yeah.
So, I mean, I can't really criticize that guy too much. It's the other one. It's kind of weird. I mean, the limping with the pocket threes makes sense under the gun. You know, trying to take a stab at it on the flop, though, you need to make a much better bet than 120 there.
Yeah.
And then you slow down on the turn. All right, I must be beat. But then you wake back up
yeah.
on the river when the board gets scarier.
His betting makes no sense. But all the other stuff up till the river totally makes sense when you know the hands. Like we said, a smaller pair that's bigger than deuces but smaller than nines. Ace nine would do exactly what it did, you know, raises to know if he's got the best hand because he's got top pair, top kicker. The smooth call by us, which means we have a deuce, and then the other call by the other guy, that's kind of weird. I mean, he may not believe anybody, but that at that point, I think when I put my probing bet of 120 out and I get re-raised and called, I got to let it go.
Yeah.
That guy just cost him another 500 chips, you know, by sticking around and then checking the turn makes sense because if we bet the turn, though, we would have gotten the ace nine probably to come along. And lost the threes, and then the river we would bet again, because if he comes along, at that point you have to believe he has the nine and not the ten, because he came along when you bet on the turn. So I don't know. It all made sense, and I kind of put the guy in ace nine, you know. And I said the only hand that makes sense was a ten, and it was 9-10. So that's why I didn't have 9-10. And when they just called, you knew they didn't have a ten when they called our re-raise or our raise on the river. So interesting hand, you know. Every single time you get a hand, you think it's pretty standard, but this was actually pretty interesting.
All right, thank you, Gilmore. We appreciate you listening, participating on the forums as often as you do, and we're going to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single-word mixed games that comes from element26.net. And remember to email your hands of the week, questions, and anything else you want to say to podcast@andyupmagazine.com.
Well, we're pushing 2 hours, so I'm just going to say I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.